Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, the Friday podcast all about your Kindle. I'm Len Edgerly, and this is episode 117 on Friday, October 15, 2010. I am in Cambridge, Massachusetts, in the midst of a Kindle-a-thon, preparing 5 episodes of the podcast in 7 days so that you will have uninterrupted shows while Darlene and I are in South Africa and Botswana for a little over 3 weeks. My sensation of total Kindle immersion is heightened by the fact that my study here is overflowing with boxes of Kindle 2s that have been donated to eBooks for Troops. They are in various stages of preparation to ship to U.S. soldiers overseas. And Ken Clark is going to take over the EB4T logistics while I'm gone. But if my room feels like a Kindle saturation zone, I can only imagine the world inhabited by John Just of the Pinellas County School District in Florida, where more than 2,000 high school students at Clearwater High have each begun using a Kindle for their schoolwork. Since a few of you raised great questions after my interview with John on TKC 114 last month, I was glad to be able to call him again yesterday to find out more details on how Clearwater High School is actually managing the content on all those Kindles.
The technical lead on this will set up this pretty elaborate spreadsheet of what books need to go with what students. It does a bunch of, lookups to their course schedule and the ISBNs of the various books. And we actually send that to Amazon on a periodic basis, and then they do a push to load everything.
As I think about it, I wouldn't be surprised if the Clearwater High School collection of Kindles might be the largest in captivity. So there's lots to learn from the county's management information's guy, John Just. It's like a live report from the frontier of what may lie ahead for schools everywhere. In news, the Wall Street Journal had the best Kindle headline of the week with their Honey, I Shrunk the eBook banner for an entirely new category of eBook content announced by Amazon. A new report on the digital book industry finds that the iPad, instead of killing the Kindle, has actually made it stronger, and Amazon releases 3 more highly produced games, aka apps, for the Kindle. For the tech tip, I'm going to explore how to add several books to a collection, as well as how to put one book in several collections. This turns out to be easier than I knew it was. And in content, the J.A. Conrath, formerly known as a traditionally published detective novel writer, is releasing free teaser e-chapters of his next Jack Daniels thriller. First up in news, Amazon this week announced that Kindle Singles will be coming soon to the Kindle store. The innovation was widely praised as a smart move by Amazon, taking advantage of the fact that ebooks don't have to fit length categories, which have come to seem immutable in the print world. The new missing link between, say, a long New Yorker article and a short full-length book is a piece of writing between 10,000 and 30,000 words, or roughly from 30 to 90 pages, and that's the target for Kindle Singles. The headline of Amazon's press release described the new idea as, quote, compelling ideas expressed at their natural length, and the subhead made it easy to visualize what they're talking about when it said Kindle Singles can be twice the length of a New Yorker feature or as much as a few chapters of a typical book. Amazon's VP for Kindle content, Russ Grandinetti, invited authors and publishers to submit work for the planned Kindle Singles section of the Kindle store. You can do that by emailing submissions to digital-publications@amazon.com. Russ said, ideas and the words to deliver them should be crafted to their natural length, not to an artificial marketing length that justifies a particular price or a certain format. With Kindle Singles, we're reaching out to publishers and accomplished writers, and we're excited to see what they create. Peter Kafka, in the media memo at the Wall Street Journal's All Things Digital blog, where that's where that great Honey, I Shrunk the eBook headline came from, stated simply, no reason not to do this. I think it's a terrific idea, and I'll be very excited to see who steps up with compelling journalism or fiction to take advantage of this entirely new category in publishing. One prolific writer whom I can imagine jumping into this space is James Fallows. As an example, he's a national correspondent for The Atlantic, and he's just one of the fastest, most thorough writers who I know. He is exactly the kind of writer I can picture coming across a breaking story, you know, maybe some baffling crisis involving China, which he's covered extensively, that would require deep reporting and research beyond the space available even in The Atlantic, but not long enough for a full-length book. What to do? Pitch it for instant publication at a reasonable price on 5 million Kindles and see what happens. Brilliant. As I've been getting excited about Kindle Singles, I came across a video done 2 years ago by another prolific journalist whom I admire, Ezra Klein of the Washington Post. In a video produced by the Columbia Journalism Review, Klein is shown sitting in front of a wall of real books, apparently in his study, speculating on the changes which might be coming due to the Kindle. Remember, this is 2 years ago.
I think that what will be interesting about things like Kindle is, you know, if they take off, is the ability to get writers to try to push the boundaries of the form a little bit more, which I think will be value added for their content. But insofar as the reader's experience go, they'll be reading more and different content and opening up a world in which there is yet more content and more of an ability for them to comment on it. But the real running thread is the reading, which I think, you know, doesn't really change that much no matter what medium you're on. What made Little Engine That Could a great book was Little Engine That Could. It was the content. And if my mom were reading it to me on a Kindle and wanted to, you know, and then the Little Engine That Could tried to go up the mountain, choo, choo, choo. You know, my mother reading me those words was much more fundamental to the experience than anything that was on the page or anything I can imagine in the Kindle. And I think that the medium there really was a transmission from a parent's voice to a child. And that medium isn't going to change. It isn't going to go away. Where the parent is getting the source material isn't, I think, the really relevant variable.
I almost have a feeling that those comments by Ezra Klein almost foreshadow the innovation of something like the Kindle Singles. And I agree with him. It is about the writing, though in the case of the example that he used to illustrate it, The Little Engine That Could, I remember that book and my parents reading it to me, and I really remember the illustrations, the blue paint on the little engine going up the mountain. But I think he's right that if my mother was reading that story to me off of a Kindle, it's the words themselves that would matter. And that's going to be the case even with an innovation like Kindle Singles. It lets writers explore the power of words, but just do it in an entirely new form, in this case, a new length. A second item in news, the LA Times this week reported that an analysis released by Cohen and Company, that's C-O-W-A-N, shows the iPad has actually helped the Kindle. Quote, not only are sales of the Kindle device expected to grow 140% this year to nearly 5 million units from 2009, they write, but digital book sales via the Kindle store are on track to grow 195% to 701 million in 2010. Cohen's survey found that 1 in 5 people who buy digital books from the Kindle store don't even own a Kindle device. Cohen analysts Jim Friedland and Kevin Kopelman wrote that, quote, iPad is not having a negative impact on Kindle device or ebook sales. In fact, they added, we think the adoption of tablets will boost Kindle ebook sales. Last in news, today I received an email from Amazon's public relations department announcing the arrival of another Kindle app. This one is a game called Triple Town, which costs $2.99 at the Kindle store, published by Spry Fox in Seattle. I can attest to its addictive play quality because a little earlier as I was working on the script here, I spent at least 15 minutes moving grass, flowers, lakes, and bushes around trying to block barbarians and wizards. This all happens on a 6x6 grid where you move the characters around with a 5-way controller. A blog post by the CEO of Spry Fox, David Ederle, gives a peek into how uncertain a space this new genre of Kindle games and apps is for both users and creators. He wrote in a blog post today, it shouldn't surprise longtime readers of this blog that I'm always on the lookout for platforms in the uncertain beginnings phase that may soon enter early glory. The Kindle seemed like just such a platform. part of Ettore's evaluation of the business prospects for a Kindle game was to estimate how many developers would actually compete in the early days of the Kindle App Store. He wrote, "While I'd imagine that software developer interest in the Kindle is quite high in general, when I personally asked a large number of my friends in the game industry, 'Are you planning to develop a game for the Kindle?' the answer was always no, or 'You can make games for the Kindle?' Furthermore, I didn't see much Kindle-related news in the game industry press or at game industry conferences. To me, that indicated a potentially unappreciated market opportunity." So he jumped in with Triple Town to test the water, and tonight someone in Cambridge, Massachusetts shelled out $2.99 to give it a try. Do I like playing a game on my Kindle? Not really. If it weren't for this podcast, I don't think I'd be very tempted to even try it. About the best I can say is maybe these kinds of diversions will serve as palate cleansers, like a bit of a scoop of sorbet between courses at a big fancy meal. You read for a half hour in some good satisfying book, and you give your power noggin a break by letting the lizard brain move flowers and wizards around on a grid. I don't know. Then maybe you go back to real brain food, another book. Stephanie Mantello of Amazon PR later today tipped me off to two more flavors of Kindle sorbet now available in the Kindle store: Solitaire by Electronic Arts for $3.99 and Minesweeper, which is a free game by Amazon Digital Services. I love Solitaire on my iPad and also my iPhone, so I shelled out another $3.99 to try it on the Kindle. It took a while to even figure out how to move the cards, again with a five-way controller, and it's pretty hard to tell black from red on a black and white screen. I still think the most logical games on the Kindle will involve words, which explains why Electronic Arts' Scrabble, which costs $4.99, is currently sitting at number 5 on the list of bestsellers across all categories in the Kindle store. But if Scrabble can be number 5, Triple Town and its ilk may find enough buyers to do pretty well by the early players like David Ettore and Spry Fox. I'd be curious what you think of this new wave of content on the Kindle games, and you can drop me a line at podchronicles@gmail.com to weigh in on this new category. By the way, if you want to try that Solitaire game, it's not easy to just enter Solitaire in a search of the Kindle store. You'll come up with all kinds of books by that name. The easiest way to reach it is just to go to amazon.com/EA Solitaire. Here's a quick tech tip. I didn't know that you can add a book to several different collections on the same screen, or that you can add several books to the same collection all in one screen. To do this, you start at your home screen, move the cursor to the highlighting underline so it's below either the name of a book or the name of a collection. Without pressing the selection button, slide the five-way to the right. If you're in a collection, click on Add Remove Items, and you'll see the full list of available titles that you can put in that collection. You basically do the same thing the other way around. You choose a book, and then you'll be able to decide which collections you want to put it in. I put those three games in a collection that I named Palette Cleansers. I asked John Just to join us again because some questions arose last time about the details of how the school is deploying 2,000 Kindles, so talked with him yesterday, October 14th. Not surprisingly, he began by talking about the 3G access, which the students have on their Kindles, and questions that have arisen concerning that feature.
We have had a lot of questions about the 3G access, which the principal was, you know, very gung-ho about students being able to access the portal. We asked about filtration of this, internet access, and that was obviously not possible. And there are no real enterprise controls on the system at all anyway. So even if we did put a proxy in or something like that that would possibly filter the internet, it would be very easy to take out for the students. So we've had a couple of parents who said, you know, I try to limit my students' Facebook access to begin with, and so this is a way that they were accessing Facebook. And, you know, we said, you know, we were fully upfront with that. Each parent had to sign an agreement before they received the Kindle, part of which was their responsibility for either opting in for our insurance or for being completely responsible for the replacement of the unit should it be lost or damaged by the student.
So they could buy some insurance that would protect against loss or damage?
They could, yes.
What did that cost?
It's a $25 premium and then $50 deductible.
Uh-huh. That's not bad.
And so that allows for the them to do. And the other thing that we put on that agreement was that, you know, this was not going to be a filtered internet. So those parents have had to make some tough choices about whether, you know, they need to work with their students individually or to take the Kindle away from that student and go back to traditional books. So it's only been a couple incidences of that. And, you know, I noticed that, you know, when you emailed me, one of your folks had a question about SIPA compliance. And, of course, SIPA applies to...
Now, what does SIPA stand for?
It's the Children's Internet Protection Act.
Okay.
It was passed back in 2000, I believe.
Okay.
Senator McCain put it forward. I think President Clinton was still in the White House at the time, mm-hmm. and signed it into law. And so it's a little antiquated because it actually refers to computers. And, you know, obviously this is an e-reader device, not a computer, and the primary purpose is to distribute the books of the 3G access. It's sort of ancillary that there is mobile web access. But, you know, something that, you know, a lot of sites they can't get to that would be normally blocked because they're either Flash or something of that nature. But there
right.
there is some inappropriate content. And again, we disclose to parents that is the case, and they had to sign off individually on that fact. So a couple questions with that. You know, there aren't the enterprise controls in place I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had some kids deregister them and then register them in their own name because they don't want their textbooks on. They want their fun books on, you know, that they want to read. So we've had Amazon's been great in working with us to identify when one of our serial numbers is deregistered and comes up registered under a different name, and we're able to track it down and tell the student, you know, we've been over this on the morning announcements many times. You can't do this. You've got to register. So we've had that happen a few times. But for the most part, I mean, given that it's 2,100 students, you know, it's
just a handful of problems at this point.
Right. We did have a few parents who said, you know, either my student's not going to be responsible enough, or I don't know about this. This seems a little crazy to me. And they did not opt to take the Kindle and instead opted for paper, traditional books. And so but the interesting thing is after the initial distribution, Mr. Mastritis has still been giving out like 2 to 3 per day in converts, if you will, of folks who said, you know what, on second thought, it seems to be going very well, so I'll go ahead and start to participate. And that continues. He's going to leave the door open for any parents who are going to opt in.
That's great.
We've also had a lot of supplementary materials added. We recently put through some of the novels and everything to go through. I don't know if we talked about. I talked to a lot of people. I don't know if we talked about the 3G access and how we kind of saturated the network when we did our first kind of push, and we've done that a couple of times.
Now, what do you mean by saturated? Putting stuff out onto the machines?
Well, you couldn't even make a phone call on an AT&T line.
Oh, because there was so much use of it.
Right. There were so that was when the books were downloading. It's really not, you know, the mobile web or anything,
mm-hmm.
Which what we initially thought might be the case. That, you know, works slowly enough and only downloads certain things. But it's when the books, when we do these big pushes where we push a bunch of textbooks down, you know, we got some calls from the local AT&T saying, hey, what's going on in this area?
Well, now, when you do those pushes, that was a question that came up from one of my listeners. How exactly does that happen? Are all these Kindles on one master account that you somehow can push to? And is the software on these Kindles the same as what everyone else has, the 3.0.2? Or what's sort of a...
Yeah, it's the same software. There's no modifications to it whatsoever. There's not really a master account at this point. We're kind of working with Amazon to help them to develop something that might work that way. Originally, when we had thought of it, we thought we were going to have several different master accounts that we would attach multiple devices to. And they said, you know what, instead of doing that, why don't we go ahead and do it individually, and you can just send us a spreadsheet of what you need, and we'll give you someone to work with here at Amazon to send that spreadsheet into, and we'll handle the download. So basically what we do is, on a periodic basis, Jim Bentz on our side, who's the technical lead on this, will set up this pretty elaborate spreadsheet of what books need to go with what students. And it does a bunch of, you know, lookups to their course schedule and the ISBNs of the various books. And we actually send that to Amazon on a periodic basis, and then they do a push to load everything.
How fast a turnaround can they give you once they get the spreadsheet?
It's pretty quick. You know, a few days. A lot of it is timing and coordinating, because they need to be on, and, you know, it needs to be at a good time of the day.
Oh.
So we have to communicate with our students, you know, make sure that you have your Kindles on, and that you're going to receive it.
One of your students has a Kindle, goes home. Is there a way for people in the family that might be interested to buy a book using their own Amazon account using this Kindle, or how can you buy a book on these Kindles?
Well, that's a good question, and one that we've been kind of talking with Amazon. We have weekly calls with them to kind of touch base on, you know, our questions and issues, and then also any questions that they have for us, and that's been something we've been talking about working through. Obviously, we have to maintain our account on the system. It has to be the school student account. We did talk about them maybe attaching a credit card to their account, one of their parents' cards or something like that, and then being able to, which is totally feasible, and then being able to download books. But what they'll have to understand is it actually stays with our account. So they're basically donating a book to the school.
Right.
Because it's a school account and not their individual account. So we're still talking through how to best do that and best communicate that to students, because you know, one of the bigger challenges has been, we go to do that push, and that's when we find out from Amazon, hey, these five kids have deregistered because they wanted to go ahead and buy their, you know, they signed up with their own account or signed up with a new account, and they wanted to get their books on it. So we want them to be able to do that.
Yeah.
It's just working through the challenges of maintaining those accounts, because we have to maintain those textbooks. We have to reuse those textbooks for students that arrive next year. We have to reuse those Kindles as well. But maintaining the rights for those, at the same time, we provide the flexibility for those that want to do extra reading.
Now, you say Amazon is looking at it, because I'm sure they can see potential here to spread the Kindle love to families.
Right.
And so you think there might be a way just to... But the limit would be they would essentially be donating books that they wouldn't somehow be able to switch the books that they bought on their account to a different Kindle.
And that's what we're kind of talking through now. It's, there's not a real good way to do that, but we may be able to come up with a not-so-technical way to be able to do that, where they could maybe take their accounts with them, because they are individualized, but they're still the school accounts. So Johnny has his own account. So our question to Amazon at this point is, can Johnny go, when he graduates, can we have Johnny's textbooks back?
Yeah.
But could Johnny take his books that he purchased with him? And if we get to that point where, you know, and that's not something that Amazon normally does. So, one-to-one sort of thing.
You'd be sort of dividing the content into two different streams.
Yes. And so that's kind of where we're trying to think of the best way to do that. And frankly, I mean, if even other members of the family, let's say there's probably, you know, a lot of our families have multiple students at multiple schools, then, you know, maybe they could also share it at home. You know, the family that reads together, you know, is going to do much better. So we're all for that. And, you know, the parents are ultimately responsible, and it's their choice to do whatever they want. I mean, it's like saying if they brought home a physics book, would dad not be able to read it? Of course he would.
Right, yeah.
Not necessarily that they want to, or something from our library that the student checked out that was interested. I mean, that's perfectly acceptable with us, but, and we encourage that. But you know, we'll have to see if we can build in that mechanism and process to provide the sort of ad hoc purchasing that people want, and they do want it. I mean, our students want that and have asked for it, and that's the reason they're deregistering, is to do their own thing as well, but also maintain the rights for our textbooks and have those come back to us so that we can use those for another incoming class.
Well, it's interesting. You can tell that Amazon's taking advantage of your experiment to work out some things that would be replicable in other schools, and this issue would be right at the center of their opportunity in getting lots of Kindles in schools.
Yeah, from our first conversations, I mean, until now, we continue to talk about account management, you know, and rights transfers and all of those sort of things. And, you know, we've had to have kind of long discussions explaining on our end how we would kind of like it to work and how practically we think it would work best. And with Amazon's help, trying to figure out then how do we get that to work with the current systems that are in place, because that's all we have. And they have mentioned a couple of times that they're paying attention. I don't know when anything would come about that would allow for some of the things that we are kind of doing. But, I mean, obviously, that's not a good business model for, you know, with all the thousands of school districts across the country, to have a person assigned to being on the other end of receiving that spreadsheet.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so they're going to have to develop.
Yeah, they'd want a system so that you could be doing that in your department.
Exactly. Exactly. And we would love that too. I mean, to have that level of control. But you know, that this is helping them develop the requirements for that system, because we're learning a lot as we go.
Yeah. Now, another question that came up, I think it might have been my questions. Some people were under the impression that every single textbook is on the Kindle, and they're saying, well, what about math and science books that have, you know, maps and charts? But can you tell me which textbooks in general perhaps aren't on the Kindle and are still being used traditional ways?
Well, so science and social studies are not on the Kindle at this point. So it's math and language arts that have been loaded. We do have some supplementary science books. Everybody will notice that all of a sudden CK-12's books, the foundation from California, that has the open source text, we approached them, and they now have their texts available via the Kindle. Anyone can utilize those, but that was a big thing for our principal and Clearwater wanting to have a supplementary materials in those areas. So we do have supplementary materials in a lot of various areas, you know, some business books and novels that are going to be used in some of the English classes, and some novels that are going to be used in some of the history classes as well. But not 100% of the textbooks are on the Kindle.
Right.
You know, geometry is one of the books that is loaded onto the Kindle.
And that works okay?
Works okay. Yeah. There are a lot of, obviously, graphics in that, and so most of them have come out pretty good and look pretty good on the screen. There's a class set, since that was a new book for every teacher. So within the class, if they have to look at something, they can pull out the class set and say, okay, this is going to be better in text version. But rather than having to buy one for every student, we can just use it for those particular areas. There's also the online version that can be viewed via media center computers or home computers if they have them available, where they can also see, you know, a more rich graphical representation of those sort of things. But it was something that very early on we got samples of, the geometry book in particular. And we're very pleased, and the mathematics department and math chair at the school were also very pleased with the way that a lot of it had come out and gave us the green light to go forward.
That's great. Another listener said, gee, in a textbook, you like to flip back and forth. You're in this chapter, and then you want to flip ahead four chapters to compare. Are you finding any sort of usability issues in moving around in the Kindle compared to what it was like with regular textbooks?
You know, I have done a lot of visitations with traditional book, you know, use in classes, and I've seen a lot of fumbling mm-hmm. in my day. And so I don't see that with the students. As a matter of fact, you know, one of our teachers was kind of upset one day because she was teaching sociology and all the kids were tapping away on their Kindles, and she said to herself, what is going on here? You know, you need to stop, put those things away. And they said, no, we're taking notes. Turned them around, and they were actually taking notes on their Kindle. So they're finding, you know, other uses that we didn't even anticipate. For them, you know, in class, we knew, you know, you have the note taking feature within the books, and we assumed that they would use that, but no, they're taking notes that they can use later for class. And so,
well, what will happen to those? What do you think will happen to those notes when the Kindles go to next year's students?
Well, so it travels with the account, and so their account will graduate. Then we'll have to, which is part of our master account, if you will. So they'll stay with their
okay.
Senior
so
account.
Yeah, that's your thing. You're working out with them. But that'd be pretty cool because they essentially would be able to take their textbooks with them with the notes that they'd put on or the highlighting, and then
yep.
The Kindles would be sort of freshly cleaned, ready for the next set of textbooks.
Right.
Well, that'd be sweet.
That would be nice. I don't know. I don't know what notes would travel, or you know, we need to kind of play around with that. But that would be very neat. And anything that they purchased optionally during that time themselves, but by their parents, would also travel with them.
Now, if a student has an iPad, say, or just a PC or a Mac that has those Kindle applications, can they pull up their textbooks from the school on those other devices?
Some of them, like the CK-12 books, I put all of those on my iPad and looked at them and actually did a comparison myself because I was pretty interested in how...
But that was just coming over on the web, right?
Right.
Okay.
CK-12 books are free, but they would have to purchase the books on another device because we only purchased enough for the amount of Kindles that we have.
But it seems like you'd be able to somehow link some of these other devices, like even an iPhone or Kindle for Mac or PC, and go to the archive and pull up these textbooks so that you could be reading them on different hardware. But maybe you can't do that with the way it's set up with your trial.
I don't know. It's a good question. We can definitely try it. I'm sure that some of our students have tried it.
Yeah. That's another way of sharing it, in effect, because somebody could be reading the book on PC and the other one could be on the Kindle.
Right.
Well, you had heard from Russia the last time we talked. Have you had any other dramatic visitors of people that have shown interest in what you're doing there?
We've had our first actual visitor. We've had a lot of calls, and a neighboring school district came the other day to kind of see it in action and visited the school, and that was pretty neat. Manatee Schools to the south of us. They're also very cutting edge in a lot of ways. So they've done the Focus SIS and PCS Portal and Moodle and all the things that we've kind of done in recent years. They've also been right along with us. And so they came and visited and had a good look. I did not have the opportunity to visit. We had a school board meeting that day to be with them. But from what I heard, it was a very positive visit.
Yeah, and you're still getting a pretty steady stream of inquiries just by email from different people?
Yep, from all over. You know, it's a little less right now. I think we kind of staved them off by saying, hey, you know, we don't know a whole lot yet.
Yeah, right.
So call us back at least the end of the first semester, and we'll be able to give you a lot more information. But, you know, it's been a very it continues to be an extremely quiet transition. You know,
there
are some dissenters, but far less than I had anticipated, and it hasn't been as much of a struggle with our instructors, and our faculty have had, you know, that pioneering attitude the whole time.
Yeah.
Our staff members, the parents have been extremely supportive, and the students just love it. So, you know, there's been a couple of people who have poo-pooed the idea, but again, far less than I would have anticipated. And you know, the biggest challenge continues to be the publishers and getting them to think in terms of this and of this new age, and convincing them that, you know, they're not going to lose out money. You know, they're reducing their costs and you know, in providing the same sort of product, just in a different method. And so that continues to be it seems like, you know, two steps forward, one step back, where, you know, we're getting some chapters and then we run into some problems with other chapters. So we have had some stop and starts where, you know, we keep saying, well, the books are loaded. Well, you know, in some cases we had the first three chapters loaded because we really pushed. And then the kids are kind of, we're done with those three chapters. And so there's this lag time between when they're when they have their next book. Again, the teachers are being great with, you know, guess what? Let's go to mobile web, download this. You know, I'll send you this PDF. We'll get something in the meantime to fill the gap. But the publishers continue to be the bottleneck in the progress with the project.
Now, you mentioned Florida state law that allows for e-text, and it sounded like that was a bit of a hammer on the publishers. What's that law, and how does that help you in these situations?
Well, it's part of, you know, originally it was, there was another bill that was much more comprehensive that mentioned, you know, that the formats and all of that sort of thing that e-text would need to be in, and that was actually rolled into our general funding bill. And then subsequently passed into law. And so basically it's one clause that says that you've got to it used to be that, you know, you would provide a textbook, you know, it was written into law, and that we had to provide a textbook as a school district, and that, you know, the publishers had to provide it at a certain established price, and they added the language and comparable e-text.
Ah.
So that was the, you know, this big bill turned into a phrase.
I see.
But it was a phrase that we were kind of able to utilize and say, you know, hey, we're supposed to have an e-text. And, of course, the lawyers are there to interpret what does e-text mean?
What does available mean?
So, it would have been nice to have a more comprehensive law. That would have assisted, and we're going to certainly push for that through our representative to try to get something that is a little more explanatory to the publishers that they have to join us in this new age.
Yeah.
And join our students ultimately in this new age.
Well, do you want to call out some publishers that are giving you trouble, and we can maybe we've got
you know,
some people.
I would kind of love to call out individual publishers, but I've it depends on what week it is, which one I'm having a problem with.
Oh, I see.
The only one. So I'll just say generally all of them, but CK12 has been all of them, but CK12. They have been terrific. They have been phenomenal. They are very customer focused. You know, they don't charge for their product. We don't pay them a dime, and yet they act like we are the customer, versus some of the other people don't act like we're the customer.
The ones that are actually getting your money are
right. They're acting like they are the customer in many cases. So you know, and these are big, humongous organizations. I mean, that will contradict themselves on different conference calls with us. So it's, and I understand their challenges, and you know, as a school district, we're not known as the most nimble organizations in the world. And I understand when people get frustrated with us as well. So I understand where they're coming from, but you know, as a comparison, CK12 has been just phenomenal to work with and amazing, and we're looking at partnering with them on some content creation and extending that partnership. So I think there is a model here. Yeah, I think that model, if you look at, you know, things like open source software and software development in general, another model, you know, it's not going to, open source hasn't necessarily changed things from the perspective of most of the software we use, but it's another competing model out there. And I think if there are not just competing companies, but competing models, it's going to help this market. And I think they could be a game changer from a lot of people's perspective, especially that our teachers love the books. You know, the big thing that we always hear from publishers is, well, what are your teachers going to say? Because this hasn't been vetted, and it hasn't been, you know, like we do with it, and hasn't been years and years of work that we have done to really, you know, iterate these textbooks to make sure that the teachers take their feedback and make sure that they're happy with them. They've been thrilled with them. So that could be a big game changer, and we're very supportive of their project as they are of ours. And but everybody else has been a challenge to work with at one time or another.
On any given day of the week.
Yeah.
Maybe they have a conference call and decide who gets to be the pain in the neck this week.
I just don't think that they see it as, and frankly, at the beginning of the project, I don't know that Amazon saw it. They saw it as kind of a boutique thing and then kind of realized at some point, whoa, wait a minute, this could be kind of crazy and big. I don't think that they have, any of the publishers have said to themselves, you know, oh, wait, let's really put something behind this.
Yeah,
it kind of takes us being, and we're a pretty big school district, so we can throw some weight as an individual customer. It's kind of taken us throwing our weight as an individual customer to kind of get our way and get this pushed through, as opposed to them kind of realizing, wow, there could be a good business model for us here or something we could take advantage of. Now, I'll say that generally. There have been specific people that we have spoken to at almost all of the publishing companies that do get it and that do say, oh, yeah, this could be big. This could be huge. This could be, it would be great for our company to be involved in something like this. But as a whole, I don't think that they necessarily see the vision.
Yeah, and probably individuals, some of these companies have some selling to do with their bosses. There'd just be a mix of perspectives within the companies.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, great. You're doing a good job out there in the front lines.
Well, thank you.
It's sort of like getting news from the prairie, you know. How are things out there in Kansas with that new school you're setting up? You know, it's sort of exciting. So
it is exciting, and we're enjoying it.
John truly does appreciate feedback, and a good way to get a hold of them is their Twitter feed, which is PC Schools in Largo, Florida. Content. I've pre-ordered Shaken by J.A. Conrath for $2.99. It will be downloaded to my Kindle on October 26th. That's the seventh book in his Jacqueline Jack Daniels series. Meanwhile, you can get a sample of the book in two parts, one free at Amazon, the other featured at Stephen Windwalker's Kindle Nation Daily blog, where there's 40,000 words of the book available for free. Conrath has had considerable success jumping ship from traditional publishing to bring his novel directly to the Kindle through Amazon Encore, Amazon's own publishing imprint. In a bit of reverse windowing, which is what we used to call when the print version showed up before the ebook, the print version of Shaken will not be released until February 2011. I have time for a few comments. Dorian Nissenson left a message on the show notes page, and I'm passing along in case anyone can help out. I wanted to ask your listeners if anyone else was having serious problems with the Kindle for Mac app. A few months ago, my Kindle for Mac stopped working. It had worked before for several months. Now when I launch it, I get the outline of the window with the Kindle for Mac in the menu bar and a spinning wheel forever. It is impossible to unregister from the app because of this. I contacted Amazon Tech Support, and after a week of trying everything, they said they could not fix it. I've tried deleting the app, deregistering it, and reinstalling. No joy. Anyone else? Solutions? Hope for the future? Drop me a line at podchronicles@gmail.com if you've got some help to offer Dorian on that problem. Nick Todd emailed from Southampton in the UK that he was interested in the interview I had last week with Sarah Diamond. He wrote, "It seems to me that by lending Kindles to her guests, Sarah is doing a great free sales job for Amazon. It made me wonder, is any scheme run by Amazon that would allow recompense to people like Sarah? The sort of system I'm imagining is one where a major buyer, say 8 Kindles or more, would be given some sort of loyalty code that they could pass on to friend, family member, or in Sarah's case, her guests. Then if these people decided to buy their own Kindle, they could enter the loyalty code and the promoter would receive a couple of dollars credited to the Amazon account. Since I'm sure many people who actually try a Kindle for real and not in a store will purchase their own unit, it seems the least Amazon could do to say thanks. Good idea, Sarah. I think you should pass that along to them." Ann Miner emailed, "As we move deeper into fall, I thought I would mention how stellar the Kindle is for use at the gym. I've used it on the treadmill, the elliptical, and the bike, all while moving at a pretty good pace. Being able to increase the type size is what makes it doable, along with the fact that pages don't flop around, as with all but the most broken-backed paper books." Thanks, everyone, for those comments. You can send me a comment at podchronicles@gmail.com, or you can leave one at the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. Next week, for the last episode before we leave for South Africa, my interview guest will be Susan Moody, Director of Communications for WorldReader.org, which has also been a big buyer of Kindles lately as the organization gears up for a year-long trial of Kindles in several schools in Ghana under the auspices of the country's Ministry of Education. It's a great story with instructive differences from the experience so far at Clearwater High School in Florida. Here's something to consider in advance. Where do you think you'd find the most resistance to e-books in schools, a developing nation like Ghana or an established school district in Florida? Music for my podcast is Ramonk by Eval Monagat on the Variations in Time, a Jazz Perspective CD by Public Transit Recording, courtesy of IODA Promonet. This is Len Edgerly from Cambridge, Massachusetts for the Kindle Chronicles. I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast. Have a great day. Bye.